It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Ah, yes, if you've been to any ballpark in your life, you've probably heard this song, and usually it gets good vibes going. Now we're still a little bit cautious before we get really enthusiastic. I allowed myself to get a little more enthusiastic that baseball has gotten through the fog here, but maybe not so fast. There's some things going on. Hopefully today they'll actually have some discussions and work through it. But to help spell it all out for us, Tyler Kepner from the New York Times. He has been writing about this and following this through the get-go. And Tyler, I know you've got to be exhausted covering this because it just makes you want to tear your hair out if you have any left. And I've got very little left, but it's just we're all at wit's end with this. But you know, I read last night, and then you had to amend your article today. I guess Tony Clark doesn't quite have as much pull from his players as maybe Rob Manfred thought he did when they left that meeting yesterday. But tell us where these things are right now.
Well, yeah, thanks for having me on. It's just one of these situations where they can't even agree on what they've talked about. You know, so Manfred comes out yesterday and issues this very hopeful statement that he and Clark left this meeting in Phoenix, hands held together and agreeing on a lot of great stuff. But then, you know, the union says, wait, that wasn't an agreement, that was just a proposal. And, to suggest that we left that with an agreement is totally wrong. So, you know, they still don't trust each other. There's still a lot of bitterness and acrimony. And what I don't know yet is what exactly the union wants. I guess it's more games because more games means more money. But, you know, we kept hearing tell us when and where. And now, you know, MLB has said, all right, 60 games, here we go. And I guess that's not enough.
Do you think at least the threat of the grievance, we feel better about that going away? I think that was part of what they discussed.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if they come to a mutually agreed upon, plan going forward, then their, you know, grievance as part of that, because a lot of it's just procedural stuff. A lot of it's like, you know, legal interpretations of the March agreement, which they still don't really agree on. But yeah, I mean, you know, certainly that was the big stumbling block the other night when Manfred was talking about how he's not confident there's going to be a season because they were really scared of walking into a trap from the union, basically, where they would have to, stage a season and then immediately be hit with a lawsuit they would probably lose.
Do you think we'll hear from Tony Clark today? How the ball is in the players' court. Would that be fair?
Yeah, definitely, because, you know, Rob has the MLB leader, Rob Manfred, has said on the record that he is going to that he is in favor of this plan. And we haven't heard that from the union. I talked to some union people last night, but I tried to get Tony to talk on the record and he wouldn't. So, you know, we still haven't really heard from Tony about Tony's on the record interpretation of what happened and what he thinks of the deal. So that's the big part that's unanswered here, as to, you know, what was his impression of the meeting the other night with Manfred, and then what are his recommendations, and if there's some, you know, any dissension in the ranks, or if the players are unified. Last night he was taking this proposal to the players and asking them, you know, for their thoughts individually on it. But they really wanted to pump the brakes because they don't think they agreed to anything, and and they view it as a proposal that they're taking their membership and going from there.
Well, we can talk about all the details for a long time, but I think for the most part, the public is just done with hearing it. They just want to know, when do you start playing, and let's work this out and get it going. But Tyler, I think the big picture is the ramifications of what's coming in the next few years with the game. I mean, you and I are in this simulated baseball league that we've referred to on our show from time to time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we have this great history. We have this deep love of the game where we care. You have a team from 1989. You're leading our entire league in batting average. You've got guys like Will Clark on your team and Wade Boggs. I've got the lowest hitting lineup in the league right now from 1984 with guys like Eddie Murray and Cal Ripken. But my point is that there's a smaller and smaller group of people that just have that deep love of the history, that we're just attached to the game. And sometimes I think baseball just completely loses that when they have discussions like this at a time like this.
Yeah, I mean, baseball, you know, my dad, actually, 74, he sent me an article he saw today that said, you know, the age of the average baseball fan is now 57 years old, you know, and in 2000 it was like 52 or something. So, like, it keeps, you know, the diehardest of diehard fans keep getting older and older. And then, you know, there's guys like us in our 40s who were raised in the 80s and early 90s and stuff, and you know, when baseball was pre-strike era, and so, you know, the industry has been doing well. I mean, you know, they always love to brag about how it's a $10 or $11 billion industry, and you know, but we're seeing a steady downtick in attendance from year to year, and even though the networks bid a lot of money for the rights to baseball, the ratings are not nearly what they used to be. Or, you know, they trail other sports too. So yeah, there's a lot of big picture issues, and I feel like baseball continually and frustratingly loses sight of the long-term damage of these short-term decisions. I mean, the minor leagues, you know, like, I mean, you were what round were you, 25th or something?
25th round.
I mean, like, you know, and now there's not going to be a, I mean, this year was a 5-round draft. In the future, apparently it's going to be like 20. So you're just going to lose these people who, you know, come into the game. And as Dayton Moore of the Royals has said, you know, maybe they don't make the big leagues, but they spread the game after they leave. And they you know, they just sort of grow it. And I worry that we're not growing the game because there's such a short-sighted view of, you know, of a lot of these owners.
I really worry about that, and I also worry about the lack of investment in getting the even younger people to play, because what we see now, and Tyler, you're probably well aware of this, but you know how travel baseball has kind of left a lot of people behind at an earlier age. They stop playing. This happens in a lot of sports, but it's so important for baseball because you lose people that otherwise could stay involved with the game, stay attached with the game.
Right.
Until they're more in high school, and now there's less people playing, and therefore there will be less people that want to, you know, watch baseball and things like that. So that thinking has got to be there at a higher level, but they can't get to that because they're so worried about whether they're going to get paid for 60 games or 66 games.
Yeah, it really is, and you know, I mean, that's a whole other issue, but you know, how much it costs to play this game at a high level. You know, in the amateur ranks, that drives away a lot of people from it, you know, 'cause they can't afford it or, you know, they can't latch onto that, showcase circuit. You know, we've seen the demographics of the game, you know, change over the years. I mean, I think the African-American, participation in Major League Baseball is way down. And I think that's had an impact, you know, on the quality of play and the maybe marketability or excitement that baseball generates. So it's just, I love baseball, and I always will. But as I've written, you know, baseball knows that it has the diehards. You know, we're hooked. It's the next generation in growing, expanding the game that they really should be worried about. But you're right. Right now they can't even figure out how to get back on the field. They've already blown the chance to come back on the 4th of July weekend. You know, they just, they, they're not hearing each other. And I've ripped Manfred a lot, and he deserves it, but I give him some credit for going out to see Clark face-to-face and really trying to push these things forward after that brinksmanship of the other night.
We're talking to Tyler Kepner of the New York Times, and that kind of brought me to my next question. And basically, we all saw the special on Monday where Rob Manfred went on and he said he has no confidence in the season starting and or baseball playing in 2020, after 5 days earlier saying that he was confident in the season starting. And he got a lot of heat for that, obviously, but I'm wondering, how come we're not pointing the finger at Tony Clark or some of these owners? Because it seems like Rob Manfred's the one out here taking the bullets, and yet everybody else is kind of, you know, throwing their hands up and let Rob Manfred take them. But it's not all his fault, even though some of his comments have, you know, contradicted himself.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think especially now, you know, it's really, you know, Tony's turn, I think, to live up to his words. You know, like we had Manfred saying 100% we're going to have a season, and then he backs off of that, and, you know, he looks terrible. And now, you know, the rallying cry from the other night was, you know, tell us when and where. And now apparently that baseball has, now it's, you know, the players' turn to live up to their words. And I think, you know, if this goes on longer, certainly a lot of focus will be on, you know, the union's leadership. And, you know, there's plenty of blame to go around. I mean, not everybody involved in this process is going about it the right way. I think they're, you know, almost all, you know, good people who love baseball, but they haven't really understood that this is a different situation than anything else. It's not a collective bargaining session. It should just be a one-off to try to get baseball back for the mutual benefit of both. And I think they're just looking at their own, you know, self-interest a little too much. And they don't have that, you know, sort of common ground of you know, the greater good. It's hard to expect that, I guess, but, you know, it's, here we are. I mean, the people I feel deserve the most blame are the hardline owners who just don't want to see, because as far as I know, you know, players all want to play, and most owners want to play, and Manfred wants to play. But there are some owners who just think, like, this is going to cost me more money to stage games than to just bang the season. And those guys, I mean, you know, I just got no time for them. I would name them if I could confirm them, but I know they're out there.
Yeah, and when I see in other leagues, now I see with the NBA and Adam Silver, and, you know, his first job and duty was to fire an owner, you know, a month in his job. And then we see with Gary Bettman in NHL, we've seen Roger Goodell in the last couple weeks kind of make that strive to start listening to their players more. And I feel like this could really have a long-term effect on the relationship between Rob Manfred and his players. Do you think so?
Yeah, I think it already has. I mean, the players don't get the sense that that Manfred really respects them, or maybe even they question how much he loves the game, which was never a doubt with Bud Selig. You know, baseball was in his blood. You know, and I think baseball players don't get the sense that Rob, you know, really maybe appreciates them or honors them the way they want to be recognized. So that's definitely a problem. They don't trust them. They don't trust that these owners have as tough a time financially as many of them claim. They think there's a lot more money out there, and they know that the owners kind of got over on the players in the last CBA. They've seen things that you know, like service time manipulation and you know, the cries about, you know, collusion, which I thought were bogus, but, you know, especially because the free agent market rebounded pretty well this past winter. But they've found a lot of things to complain about and to be unhappy with. The squeezing out of a lot of veterans from the game, the way they, you know, shuttle these kids back and forth and get a lot of production out of young players without paying them much. There's a lot of issues the union has with Rob Manfred and the current administration. And, you know, even if we have a season this year, the future of the game is still a little perilous because of that the lack of trust that we're seeing play out in public right now.
Tyler, if it or when this season resumes, and if it is 60 games, you got some fans who, you know, would take the 60 games, obviously, and then, you know, their team win a championship and they'll accept it. But then, however, you got the other fans who are like, all this turmoil that's going on between the players and Rob Manfred, and, you know, I'm checked out of this season. So even if they do 60 games, I'm not going to accept my team winning a championship. Where do you think fans fall in line with the 60 games?
Well, I think if you like baseball, eventually, you know, you'll get over, you know, being angry or bitter at the fact that, you know, in April, May, and especially June, you know, these guys were fighting about money. Because when you really think about it, I mean, the NBA is coming back in late July. That's still roughly baseball's timeline. So all these start, I mean, let's say best case scenario, all these sports start to come back around the same time. You know, we'll go to our respective tribes. You know, if you're a baseball fan, you'll watch baseball, and I would think if your team does well, you'd get into it. I still think that if they play a season, that for the most part, fans will tune in. Everybody's starved for live sports competition again. There's no ticket buying, you know, to measure fans' interests. You know, you can't say like, oh, attendance is down 20% because there's no attendance at all. So I think fans, I don't know, maybe, well, I don't know what you guys think, but I think fans will have enough time, you know, a month between the negotiations. Like, let's say they make a deal now. There's still going to be another month. Let's say they make a deal in 10 minutes. Like, there's still going to be a month for everybody to get used to the fact that it's going to be a 60-game season. That means a month of promotion, a month of, you know, stories about how the Indians are going to look and how the Phillies are going to look and how the Padres are going to look. You know, like, all that stuff's going to come back again. And I think a month is a long enough run-up for fans to wrap their heads around a 60-game season.
Yeah, because Tyler, with me, I grew up a Dodgers fan, and obviously I was excited for this season because, you know, Mookie Betts and David Price coming to the team, and look, I would take a 60-game season. I'll take baseball in general, but I just feel like MLB has missed like a golden opportunity for growth in their game because they see all these other sports coming back with the NBA, with NHL, and MLS. And, you know, we thought that MLB would probably be the first one to get the stuff together, and all of a sudden they're not. And then you're possibly going to start the season, you know, in the mix of college football and possibly with the mix of the NFL. And I just feel like it's going to be hard for them to kind of get that attention back to – from not the diehard fans, but fans like me who kind of check in on their favorite team and then kind of just check out.
Right. And that was, again, where they should have had a bigger picture mentality here, is that, you know, let's distinguish ourselves from the rest of the pack by getting out there early 4th of July weekend, you know, living up to all of those high-minded ideals that some of us who love baseball really do believe in. You know, as corny as it sounds, like, you know, imagine if baseball was back on the 4th of July, even without fans, you know, it would still be something that we could resume as having a part of our daily lives, part of the background noise of America. I believe in that stuff, you know, for baseball fans. I still think they're more baseball fans than any other sport, just based on how many dates that baseball has to sell compared to football, and how bigger the stadiums are compared to the little arenas in the NBA and NHL, who have half the games to sell. So, in other words, I still think it's America's number one sport, but I think that's always something baseball needs to protect, and they always have to. They have to take the mentality of a pitcher like Mike Mussina, right? Like, when I covered Mike Mussina, he said as for his entire career, which ended with a 20-win season, for his entire career, he was worried about that kid in the minors trying to take his job. He could have all the salary, you know, all the financial security he wanted, but he's like, there's always some kid coming up trying to be better than me, trying to take my job. So if I don't constantly try to innovate and constantly try to think about how to get better, I could get passed by. And I sometimes think that baseball, yeah, that, you know, they're the national pastime and all that, but they've got to continue to think of ways to promote that and keep that. And a 4th of July return would have been amazing, would have given people that jump. And now they're just going to be, if they return at all, they're going to be right in the middle of that mix of everything else.
I'm talking to Tyler Kepner from the New York Times. And Tyler, digging through your article yesterday, one thing that I really noticed, that really caught my eye, was the possible universal implementation of the designated hitter in the National League as well until 2021. In your personal opinion, is that something that you think that we can see in baseball once that time period ends in 2022 and beyond?
Probably. I mean, I don't think that if they put it in, I don't think they'll take it out. I mean, the players have always wanted it. As a union, not every player, but like as a union, they've always liked the idea, because even though teams don't necessarily have a one DH play 150 games anymore, they like to move guys in and out. It's still, an offensive position, and that, teams can spend money on. And I think it's the union perception is that it's going to be more valuable to the players, to have, more, a DH everywhere. So, So I don't think it's something, if the union, as long as the union sees it as a check mark on their side of the ledger, they're not going to give it back up. So I would think that it would be here to stay. And isn't it funny that, the DH or no DH has been such a huge debate, since 1973. And now it seems like it's just sort of almost an afterthought, like, okay, fine, DH, wait, whatever, DH in both leagues, let's go, let's just play. Like, it's like, whoa, wait a minute, that's been a big deal for a lot of years, but, we got bigger issues to think of right now, I guess.
Yeah, I hope, Tyler, in a couple of weeks, we can have that discussion with gusto and have a lot of fun with it. Right now, I'm still cautiously moving forward, hoping for some good news here. And so we don't want to keep you too long, because I feel like during this interview, Tony Clark may have texted you and said, I'm ready to go on the record. I'm ready to give you scoop here. But I'm also certain that you need to check your rosters and your matchups for the big matchup today that you've got with the Rain Men in our league. I think last night, Jose Oquendo got a big hit in like the 11th or 12th inning to sink you guys. So you got to come back strong today. I think it's Greg Maddux against Pascual Perez. Is that right?
I don't have Maddux on my team.
Or is it Kevin Brown?
I think it's Langston's turn. He's been a little bit of a disappointment for me so far. It's Cid Fernandez for me, and he's been terrible too. I really try to draft based on like opponent average, because I feel like all the hitters are good, so I just want pitchers who are really hard to hit. And my opponent's average stinks. I mean, I'm hitting like crazy, which is awesome. I'm 8-5, but I got my first 2-game losing streak of the season, Willie, and a big 4-game series with Mitch Leight. So I don't know. We got to get it done here. Cid's got to lay off the tacos and the burgers and get back on the treadmill there and get a win for us.
Yeah, Cid Fernandez, you got to watch him close. No question about it. I've got Alejandro Pena, a young Alejandro Pena, going today, 84 ERA leader in the National League against one of the several versions of Nolan Ryan we have in our league, a younger Nolan Ryan from 1972, one of his first years with the Angels. So yeah, that's my matchup at noon. So we'll be checking the box scores, I'm sure, at around 12:30 Central.
It's a very interesting sort of experiment as to who the computer really thinks was good compared to who we thought was good and what stats translate and which don't. I also took a ERA leader with a, lower amount of innings in Scott Gorelt from the 80s, kind of a similar, reliever / starter guy like Alejandro Pena was. So we'll see how those guys do if that holds up in the simulated world.
Yep. Someday when we get through the fog, we'll look back on this time. How did we get through without real baseball? It's called whatifsports.com. So colleagues of mine here got me into it, and I pulled you and several other people who I know are huge baseball fans to get into this. So maybe someday we'll go back and analyze this. But in the meantime, let's just hope that Tony Clark calls you today with some good news. Tyler, thanks a lot for coming on with us today.
All right, Phyllis. Thanks very much for having me.
All right. That's Tyler Kepner from the New York Times. Does a tremendous job covering Major League Baseball. He's covered the Yankees for a long time, covered the Mets for a time, is a graduate of Vanderbilt, and once upon a time was covering the Commodores for the Vanderbilt Hustler. So always appreciate his perspective. When we come back, we'll talk about where we go from here from baseball. We'll also look ahead. We've got Adam Vigan coming on at 11 o'clock. We'll talk Roman Yossi. We'll also talk about something he's written about this week, looking ahead at the Predators roster and how well it's positioned going forward, and things like, yes, the expansion draft. Seattle will be coming into the league in a couple years. Where are the Predators going with that? What might their thinking be? What are the options that they have to try to keep their roster intact as much as possible. Stay tuned. We've got a lot more coming here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.